You're live.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the January 24th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Okay. Amended items to consent. Item number 8 and 10 is being amended to replace the resolution and notice of completion due to an error when the item was printed. Amended item of hearing. Item number 17 is being amended to replace the resolution due to an error when the agenda was printed. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll move along in the agenda. The first item is our consent calendar, and I'll open it to the public. For anyone wishing to speak on consent, I have one request from Eric Greening, consent item 13. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and this is a food supply contract. And I would again like to thank your board for passing the Climate Action Plan, our EnergyWise plan. Now that it is in effect, we are going to be doing some things differently. I'll call your attention to Chapter 5, Policy 37, Local Food. Basically, any opportunity we have to source food products locally, we should take. We can reduce emissions that way. In addition to the environmental effect, obviously there's an economic effect, and you're working on an economic plan that includes uniquely San Luis Obispo County. To the extent that we can source food used in public contracts from local agriculturalists, we are building this county's prosperity, both the prosperity of the agriculturalists themselves and the prosperity of those they do business with and of those they pay taxes to. So I realize that these things tend to come along on a fairly regular basis, and you have certain ways of scoring contractors and so on. And maybe it's too late to do anything about this one, but we are in a new world of realization and recognition, and perhaps the point system we use for deciding who should get a contract should include something about local sourcing, and word should start going out to potential bidders or suppliers of food for public uses so that they start to realize that this is one of the things we're going to be looking for. Anyway, I wanted to bring it up because you do have a fairly hefty amount of food that is going to be consumed, and the more of it that can come from local sources, the better it will be for all of us. Thank you.
Very good, Mr. Greening. Thank you. And I did receive another request to speak, Richard Margetson, on item 7.
Richard Margetson, this item is dealing with an amendment to a property transfer agreement for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. First of all, it refers to an agreement that was signed July 26, 2011, but that agreement is not attached to this document for reference to see how these changes affect that document. My concern with this is this document is adding a lateral connection to this property. There's already a lateral connection in the project for the home on this property. This is a staging site in Los Osos. Mr. Gray has worked for years to try to accumulate retrofit credits for future attempt at building on this property. Even with the water situation, the HCP issue in Los Osos, and approval from the Coastal Commission. This 8-inch lateral is being added to this agreement. I guess, and it is a track map. It's an approved track map. But I guess my question is the project providing laterals to all of the vacant, large vacant properties in Los Osos at the expense of the wastewater project? Or is this just an additional perk to Mr. Gray for coming up with this, for agreeing to this agreement on this property to be used as a staging site for the Los Osos wastewater project? It would have been nice if the original agreement was in this staff report.
I'd like to speak to Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll have asked staff to speak to item 7, and I'll quickly second Mr. Greening's comments on item 13.
Okay, very good. Mr. Hill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
None.
No. Mr. Teixeira?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, and I'll follow up on 13 as well. So, Mr. Gibson, item 7.
I wonder if either Mr. Acosta and Mr. Waddell or both in harmony might give us a quick rundown on the details of this particular modification.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gibson. Thank you for the question. Would like to clarify on the Gray property, and then previously that was owned by the Walker family. We're not aware that there was an approved tract map. There was a tract map that had been applied for and then had been withdrawn or dropped. And so as far as we're understanding, there is not an approved tract map. But under the previous transaction in 2003, I believe, there was some confusion left as to what the CSD's obligation, and of course now we're assuming their responsibility for constructing the project. There was some confusion left as to what the agency's obligation would be in constructing the sewer project. We are trying to clarify that, and so the 8-inch lateral that is being left after the project is constructed was already created as an obligation under the previous project. The 4-inch lateral that we are going to be obligating ourselves to for the residents had been overlooked. So a lateral to the edge of the right-of-way for the residents is something that had been overlooked. The property owner is responsible for connecting from the edge of the right-of-way to the house. So we're not constructing a lateral all the way to the residents, but similar to other properties, we're constructing a lateral to the edge of the right-of-way. And then the stub out was a previous obligation. So in clarifying these two items, we are eliminating what could potentially be a very large and expensive obligation in the confusion of the previous transactions.
And
these
and
are very necessary clarifications.
The obligation for the larger lateral is part of using that as a staging area in terms of an agreement?
Not necessarily, no. It was actually more to clarify what our obligations were under the previous transactions. We could have been left open to provide connections for a future tract map approval if we had not clarified.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And then Supervisor Gibson, a follow-up on 13.
I did it. I think local food supply is going to be a very interesting issue that we're going to hear more about in this coming year, and look forward to that conversation.
Very good. And to follow up with Mr. Greening on that question, this particular contract for food purchasing for jail and juvenile hall is for bulk items, and I did see if that entering into this agreement would in any way hinder our ability to purchase locally, and it will not. And we do have a group working now to come forward with a local food purchase policy for the county, and we look forward to hearing from them in the near future. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved as amended.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
I'm sorry, let me say that
it's
again.
All right.
Mr.
No.
Gibson?
I knew you'd get to me. Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Then Mr. Gibson?
Or Mr. Meacham?
Mr. Meacham? Oh, my gosh. I'm
Whoa.
Not going to look at this anymore.
He doesn't get two votes.
Let me start over. Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira. Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So we'll carry on with open public comment on items not on the agenda, and we do have a few requests to speak on public comment. I would ask any of you wishing to speak on items not on the agenda this morning to please fill out a request to speak form and bring it forward to the clerk. I'll call two names, beginning with former Supervisor Shirley Bianchi, followed by Mary Bianchi.
Well, good morning, all. I'm here, for the record, my name is Shirley Bianchi, and I live on the North Coast. I'm here today to honor the first 5 years of Martha's Place and to thank the board for your support. In April of 2003, when 11 of us traveled to Chicago to meet with Drs. Ira Chasnoff and Rich McGurdy, I had no idea what would happen, neither there nor afterward. What occurred afterward were many, many meetings here in SLO, some with the good doctors who came out from SHED is of paramount importance. The name could be changed, and we would still be here advocating for these children because we know intimately what can happen without assessment and treatment. Because this was a brand new type of agency in this county, in the startup process, we made some mistakes. Among them was tasking people and agencies with responsibilities which they were not able to carry out. A little over a year ago, we acquired from Behavioral Health a very competent on-site administrator, Courtney Wagner, who has made remarkable strides in bringing Martha's Place toward the outcomes we really want. What we don't want is to duplicate services that are available elsewhere in the community. And although we are very much aware of budget constraints, I am a child of the 1930s, after all. We do not want to dilute the multidisciplinary organization of Martha's Place. Study after study has indicated that this is the only system that works with these children. My responsibility this morning has been to introduce the subject of Martha's Place and say why we are here. Other speakers will cover other subjects. Thank you for your time and your support of Martha's Place. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bianchi. Mary Bianchi, followed by Lisa Frazier.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. I'm Mary Bianchi, a resident of Atascadero, Chair of the Model of Care Partners Oversight Committee, and a member of the Friends of Martha's Place. My mother is giving you the perspective from which Martha's Place was launched. The intent then and now is to provide mandated services for our children 0 to 5. But think about this just for a moment. Children newborn to 5 years old. Remember, if you will, holding your own infant child. Remember trying to figure out why he or she cried. Imagine because of abuse an infant who does not respond to you at all or is frightened by your touch or a toddler who strikes out violently. Bewildering and painful, but scenarios for which there are systems of care to provide help. Martha's Place provides the comprehensive assessment for these children, which fits our local system of care. We know from research, evidence, and local experience that the multidisciplinary team at Martha's Place provides the appropriate standard of care. The public health nurse, pediatrician, mental health therapist, and psychologist are specialized in working with infants and toddlers. Because of their expertise, these children are neither misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, results that can lead to even greater damage to their development. Because of their expertise, families receive information and referrals to services that help them understand the needs of their child and how to help their developing brains repair the damage that was caused by abuse, neglect, or prenatal drug or alcohol exposure. As is true of other health agency programs, Martha's Place requires general fund support. We ask that you not hold this program to a higher standard for cost recovery. Medi-Cal, SenCal, and other programs reimburse many of the services. Clear evidence exists of cost avoidance from the interventions provided by Martha's Place. Just one of these children, correctly diagnosed, who succeeds in staying out of the juvenile justice system, will save your probation programs $12,500 a year. 5 successful children covers the cost of non-reimbursable pediatrician services. Recognize that more than 500 of our children have already been assessed at Martha's Place, and your child welfare services, drug and alcohol services, public health, and other county mental health providers depend on Martha's Place to increase their fiscal efficiency by providing comprehensive assessments to more than 100 children every year. Additionally, in the community, families, pediatricians, the Tri-County Regional Center, schools, the women's shelter, private practice therapists, and the sexual assault response team rely on Martha's Place to help with 100 more children each year. We recognize you're struggling with providing the dollars now. It's the purpose of Martha's Place that these 500 and more children never enter your court system, interact with your probation department, or end up in your juvenile hall or mental health facilities. And perhaps the chance for success that your support provides means ending the generational cycle of abuse, neglect, and drug and alcohol use. We thank you for your past and continued support of our children and the multidisciplinary efforts at Martha's Place. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Bianchi. Lisa Frazier, followed by Hank, looks like Hohenstein.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and supervisors. My name is Lisa Frazier. I am a resident of Atascadero and a longtime resident of San Luis Obispo County for over 35 years. I am here today representing the San Luis Obispo County Child Abuse Prevention Council, a nonprofit organization, and also a unique collaborative called Beginnings of San Luis Obispo County, with the support of the United Way of San Luis Obispo County and First Five of San Luis Obispo. We make this collaborative function in a high level so we can bring education and outreach activities that talks about alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use during pregnancy. Alcohol use during pregnancy is the leading cause of preventable retardation and social-emotional disorders. Prenatal exposure to alcohol, tobacco, women were screened for alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use in the month before they knew they were pregnant, as well as continued use after being known pregnant. Of those, 37% had a positive screen. The largest use was alcohol compared to tobacco and marijuana. Of the women who used alcohol, 37% continued use after known pregnant. Our birth rate in San Luis Obispo County is approximately 2,900 per year. That means over 1,000 babies are born each year exposed to alcohol. And with only 60% of pregnant women currently being screened, we know this number is very low. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just thank Madams Bianchi and Frazier for coming down to talk a little bit about Martha's Place. It's my pleasure to represent this board on the committee affectionately known as MOCPOC, sort of an advisory committee to both the county and the and Martha's Place, widely construed. And it's I just want to tell you, it's been a remarkable experience. On the one hand, confronting some of the most heart-wrenching problems that society has in children who are very, very young, and at the same time seeing such an amazingly dedicated and caring bunch of folks from a wide variety of agencies and perspectives come together to try to do good work. I congratulate Martha's Place on 5 years, and I look forward to my continued participation in this wonderful program. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson, and thank you for coming down. You do provide a service that is much needed in the county, and if it weren't for Martha's Place, it simply wouldn't be provided. So thank you for your efforts. Hank, Hohenstein, followed by Quintana, and I can't quite pronounce the last name, but you can help us with that when you come up. You're up next. Mr. Hohenstein.
Mr. Chairman, my remarks this morning are addressed to Mr. Meacham, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Teixeira, and Mr. Patterson. Our country has adopted, or our county rather, has adopted a mission, vision, and organizational value statement. And I will quote from that this morning. It says all elected officials, employees are committed to serve the community with pride to enhance the economic, environmental, and social quality of life in San Luis Obispo County. All in our county, elected, appointed, and employed are required to be trained in the performance of their respective tasks and in implementation of the values noted in the statement above. The purpose of the statement is to provide a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. All very admirable. Recently, a certain phone call was made by one of your members that has caused significant conversation in my neighborhood, on talk radio, and in other media outlets. The maker of that phone call was impersonating a citizen of our community. And to make matters worse, that person was a political opponent. And the words being spoken were derogatory political characterizations. Soon afterward, a recording of the conversation was made public. The speaker, as he identified himself, was in fact not that person. And the question on everyone's lips was, who was the mystery voice? It was soon identified as the sitting member of the Board of Supervisors. We were all then treated to a denial, then an admission, followed by a shabby, insincere, duplicitous statement masquerading as an apology. I know of no one who accepted the public expression as stated. The phone call was no practical joke. Let me address a couple of issues. Integrity. This document demands that we act in a high ethical and moral standard, uncompromising honesty in our dealings with the public and each other. Professionalism, personal accountability for the performance of our jobs, bestows credibility on ourselves and on our community. Professionalism, does it treat others with respect and honesty? I have other comments, but let me close. I'm asking here four questions. Have you asked for feedback that may provide you the feedback, and what may your response be to these requests? The document which I bears a copyright, may I use that copyright? Will you place this matter on the agenda for further public comment? And if you fail to comply with this request, what will you do, or will this event die a slow, unattended death?
Thank you, Mr. Ornstein.
And downplay of the whole incident is a perfect example. And your reticence leading up to not only that incident, but also his autocratic demeanor as chairman in this hallowed chamber has enabled him to believe that he is untouchable. As an elected administrative representative, you took an oath to uphold not only the Constitution of the United States and the state of California, you pledged to represent the populace of your districts. As an elected official, you're in a leadership position, but have failed in your duty to lead and publicly admonish Supervisor Hill about his unethical comportment toward the citizens of opposing ideas, and it reflects the deficiency of your leadership abilities. District 3 deserves an apology from Supervisor Hill. You owe the people of your districts that same apology, and only you can do that publicly by publicly censuring your peer. If you are unwilling to or incapable of publicly admonishing Supervisor Hill, please step aside so the citizens of this county can elect public servants who will not shirk in their responsibilities to their constituency. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ambrose. Ben DeFada, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, Board, Sheriff, and Public. I am Ben DeFada from Supervisor Gibson's District 2 bankrupt community of Los Osos. For you to spend money that will place many property owners and businesses into more debt, or even worse, out of their homes and out of business, is not the reason you five were elected for. In these hard financial times, the public needs to know what you guys are doing to Los Osos. Folks are having difficulties keeping food on the table and a roof over their heads. Several thousand cannot afford $250 a month, or maybe more, if you count everything else. Can't you see a ripple effect will put other businesses out of business? The public needs to know that you five keep voting to give Gibson more money to study this project to death. Total in the last 6 years is now over $10 million for studies that have been done over and over. The public needs to know that 3 years ago, Gibson staff went to Washington with a shovel-ready project for loan money. So the question is, why are you five still spending more money for studies that have already been done before? You five are the problem. We are all familiar with this county's costly decisions and mistakes that to date has cost Los Osos Prohibition Zone property owners over $40 million in the past 20 years with no sign of a sewer. $40 million wasted along with your delay in this project has caused the near failure of our aquifer due to saltwater intrusion, our only source of drinking water. The cost Los Osos is sitting on a sand dune with 5,000 years of Native Indian and Esha concerns should be a good reason to not build Mr. Gibson's deep pipe expensive flawed gravity collection project. The people in District 2 that's having an election for two of you need to know that these two supervisors in those districts voted every time to give Gibson millions of dollars for this $200 million flawed, overpriced, expensive, unaffordable, antiquated, energy hog, stinking gravity, big pipe collection project, and big sludge maker treatment plant. Now, I'm running out of time, and I'm really disappointed you guys wanting to take over Mr. Dan DeVal's Sunny Acres. Anybody else, you know who your crony friends are, you would stand on the table and holler, yippee, the man's doing a good job. Give him all the money he needs to take care of people that are homeless. He has given himself and his land most of his life to helping the homeless. Just like Martha's place there, Mrs. Bianchi was saying, you all praise that. But look what Gibson's trying to do. Look what Mr. DeVal is trying to do.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada.
You could have gave him a loan or put what the $27,000 you needed on a tax bill.
Thank you, Ben. Gwen Taylor, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos. We all know we have had much-needed rain, but it's only a drop in a big bucket. Every supervisorial district in the county has some water problem, one that needs to be addressed now, not later. Often the concerns for water have been put off to later with a knee-jerk reaction. The Los Osos water basin is out of balance. The continued pumping exceeds the safe yield and will continue until action is put into place. To manage the groundwater basin with an active basin plan is needed now. As time continues to increase, the saltwater intrusion are additional needs that can be implemented that are less complex. Until a basin plan is implemented, stop issuing building permits and well permits until a basin plan is implemented and groundwater is brought into balance. Seawater intrusion can be verified and is in control. This is the only thing that is going to save our basin. Do it now, not later. Every one of you has a problem in your district. We have a major problem in our district. Have our supervisor address it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Al Barrow, followed by Eric Greening.
Takes a minute to come on, Al, after you turn it on.
There you go. Good morning. Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. First, I'd like to define constructive fraud. Conduct that is considered fraud under the law despite the absence of an intent to deceive because it has the same consequences as an actual fraud would have, and it is against public interest as because of the violation of public or private trust or confidence, the breach of fiduciary duty, or the use of undue influence. Under this project of $200 million, there could be an economic and punitive damage under that California code of over $200 million because of the constructive nature of the fraud, which has occurred since 2006 when the county took the project. County taxpayers are at risk. If the gravity sewer is stopped, it has been stopped twice, and the loan defaulted once. The Cylinder Earmark project, this type of project, will affect the President of the United States, Lois Capps, and other officials who are involved in this type of project. The 218 promise was broken. A head-to-head bid was promised. That was denied after a $25,000 assessment was approved by Mr. Gibson. The federal loan applications misrepresented the facts on the ground. USDA, state revolving fund loans, were applied for and up to $180 million and or maybe a little less now. Nevertheless, those federal funds are public assets. In the application, the preliminary engineering report, earthquake and liquefaction was not mentioned. That is a constructive fraud. The officials that were in charge of this project, the loans, were not informed of these issues. Screening misrepresented, that is, fine screening and rough screening misrepresented the step costs. 1% profits are going to be paid for by poor residents. Montgomery Watson Harza is one of the international giants of the wastewater industry.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Your time is up. Eric Greening, followed by Lindy Owen.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and as you know, I have been advocating that you get ahead of the curve relative to hydraulic fracturing before it's in a position to threaten groundwater in this county. Something that we learned last week during your hearing on the truancy ordinance is that in the middle of March, there will be a day on which 2 hours is available, and you did not plug the truancy matter into that because it needs more time. We know that that's available. Please plug this in for a study session and possible action item on hydraulic fracturing. You can find the time that's there. It's unfortunate that this month of January, so far every session you've had has not had an afternoon session. We could have done it this month, but in any event, that's under the bridge. We know when we can do it. Relative to the truancy item, I'd like to thank you for not ramming forward with it and for taking the time for consultation. I do want to clarify, though, what consultation should be. I know that a majority of you have already given conceptual approval to the ordinance as written and seem to think that consultation simply means doing a better. Just like to remind the public that this is the time of year when if you have an unmet need for bikeways or public transit, you can email unmet_needs@slocog.org, slocog.org, call 781-1520, or be in this room on Wednesday, February 1st, next Wednesday, February 1st at 8:30 a.m. to let your needs be known. This is the time of year. Thank you.
Thank you for that announcement, Mr. Greening. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. Again, I was mentioned earlier, it's in the air now. Do we have 5 representatives for the people, for the districts in this county, or do we have 5 politicians? 5 politicians will continue to go along with Mr. Gibson's sewer project, which is completely invalid at this point, considering the economic situation in the country, in the county, and in the communities in Los Osos, and the financial burden that it puts on with absolutely no benefit, except to Montgomery Watson Harza and all the players. The point about the sewer is it creates 3 problems that we don't currently have. Number one, there is nowhere to put 800,000 to 1 million gallons of water that is collected. There is no place to put it safely in Los Osos or even distribute it back where it was originally. So you're making a huge mistake, probably making the saltwater intrusion go at a higher pace than it has been going. is currently going 7 times faster than estimated. We're going to be out of water, and we don't want your Nacimiento project. I don't care how much Pava Ogren is in trouble for not selling it all. It does not belong in Los Osos. We don't have $30 million to pipe it to ourselves. Thank you. Number two, this project generates tons of sewage, of sewer sludge. There's currently really no place to take the extra sludge that would be produced out of my community, 2 truckloads a week, possibly more. Septic tanks reduce those solids by 80 to 90%. Therefore, you have a very small amount of waste created in a septic tank, and its removal has so much less impact. Number three, cost. We are currently able to have people come in and pump our septics, and if we had a septic management program that was mandated, we would be paying probably $40 a year to have septic management. But that was ignored by this county. Energy dependency is the other part of that formula, cost and energy dependency. We are currently able to get through with electrical outlet breakdowns. Our septic tanks continue pumping, taking care of our treatment. The rest of the cities dependent on the large sewers will not have that luxury. The crime is allowing the saltwater intrusion to continue and continuing to act like 10 to, you know, a couple milligrams over in nitrate readings is the crime. That isn't the problem anymore. And this focus should have been switched over to preserving our basin and stopping the saltwater intrusion. The only way you're going to do that is to go back and look at the alternative step collection system, which will survive an earthquake, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Richard Margetson, followed by Laura Mordaunt.
Richard Margetson, three things. If a member of the public asks a question on a consent item, please, and if you didn't read the item, that's fine, but have them answer the question that was asked, because the question I asked was not answered. And obviously, with no follow-up from anybody on the board, it's obvious that I don't know if all the board members read the item. Next item is I told you there's 9 weeks from last week. We're going to proceed in a different direction. If we don't hear from somebody from the county that they would like a sit down with myself and Keith Swanson on the rates and charges ordinance that I think at this podium I approved, was developed under false information, and it's going to need to be corrected at some point. There's no way around it. It's going to have to be put out for another 218. But as of today, I still have not heard from anyone. So on the overhead, when this ordinance was put before you, Will Clemens, on the day that the ordinance was adopted in December of 2010, told the district, plus the percentage at the top of that chart of what commercial consumption was in the district. So I guess that argument holds no water anymore. And that's probably what's going to hang you when this gets further down the road. There's other issues with this ordinance that are troubling, but you have no way around correcting this. 8 weeks from today, gentlemen. It'd be nice to hear from one of you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. And my last request to speak this morning on public comment is Laura Mordaunt.
Hi. I live in San Luis Obispo, and because of my issues with Golden State Water, I have had to learn about the sewer. I have been unintended consequences of my problem because Golden State interacts with Los Osos as well as San Luis Obispo. So as a result, I have to educate myself on what is going on there because we're looking at a water issue in my area in terms of rates. So my question to all of you is, this is a tired subject. I've listened to these people more than once, and the information that I keep coming across says to me that there's a big problem here. The decisions that were made do not look good. If we were to readdress those from an outside source, rather than whatever happened in this community, I don't know. I've only been here 8 years. I've only got forced voluntarily into educating myself. And once I start down that path, I'm concerned and confused because the rest of the county doesn't all have sewers. I do. But the rest of the county doesn't 100% have sewers. So is this an intention, a progressive wave of non-sewered people in our county? This is a concern that I don't think is limited to Los Osos people. They are an example of something really odd. And if we had a mini-series on this, it would be very entertaining. I have been entertained, except that I'd wake up, shake my head, and go, this is real. These are people in my community, and I need to care about that. So do everyone else who doesn't live in Los Osos. The other thing I wanted to say is, I know that there was comment early on in this open period about Adam Hill's comments to Ed Waggie, stating that he was Ed Waggie. I want to say that during the bag controversy that we had on that Wednesday, I was upset that I and others who spoke about liberty and freedom were then characterized by Adam as being homophobic or anti-abortion or whatever. We did not have that as an open discussion, and I resent that you putting me in that category, or any of us that spoke about freedom and liberty, because we were all in agreement that we want to do something about the bag problem. We are not here as opposing people. It was just that I believe in education and some chose to have an ordinance. That was the differential, not those rude comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mordaunt. That was my last request to speak on public comment, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, and Supervisor gets.
Yes, Mr. Patterson. Ms. Mordaunt, I'd be happy to discuss the history of the Los Osos Wastewater Project with you. I think rather than take up time in public session, as we have spent hours literally over the last 5 years, welcome you to contact my office and be happy to chat with you about it.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to our hearing calendar. Supervisor Meacham?
Well, I think that, you know, I was kind of hoping to hear from my colleague a little bit of a either explanation or an apology, if you will, because, I mean, I've had a lot of calls. We've heard a lot of comments about this, and it's always very difficult to sanction, if you will, or whatever the case may be, a colleague. That is not a very comfortable thing for anyone to even engage in discussion about. But in this particular case, I mean, it's drawn attention to the entire board. And I for one, feel like, I mean, the board's owed an apology for this. And I think that the public is owed an apology for it. And Mr. Waggie's owed an apology. Whether you choose to do that or not, that's entirely up to you. But we've wasted a lot of board time hearing things that was brought upon the board, not of our doing. So I just would have expected more from my colleague, and
I'll be happy to answer, and Mr. Meacham, and an innocent joke with a friend who is here was distorted, and I am a.
And I'm happy to discuss that with you as well. I have had three people contact me regarding this issue, and. Again, I think it's something, it's unfortunate that it occurred, and it was blown out of proportion by certain media venues, and, it puts us in a position to have to explain something we had essentially nothing to do with and don't have all the details, and I think should the details come out on that one, we'll see that it is more of a trivial matter, whether in good taste or not, is not for us to decide, but I want to this morning move on with board business. So with that, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce the next item?
Item 15, a request to adopt resolutions to approve an associate membership agreement with the California Enterprise Development Authority and approve the issuance of a tax-exempt bonds by the California Enterprise Development Authority in the amount not to exceed $4 million for the Atascadero Christian Home.
Very good. Thank you. And Ms. Emily Jackson is here from the Office of the County Administrator, and we do have a scripted protocol here for this effort, and we actually have two actions to take, and Ms. Jackson will provide the staff report and help lead us through the process. Ms. Jackson?
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning. I am Emily Jackson from the County Administrative Office. Before we begin the hearing, I have a brief introduction to outline what your board is being asked to do today, given that this type of hearing comes up so infrequently and generally does not include an associate membership agreement. So there are two resolutions before the board today. The first is to approve associate membership agreement with the California Enterprise Development Authority. And then the second resolution is to actually approve the financing on behalf of Atascadero Christian Home. The process for this item is to first adopt the resolution to approve the associate membership agreement, then to hold a public hearing with respect to the county's approval of CETA's issuance of bonds on behalf of the Atascadero Christian Home, and then to adopt the resolution to authorize the actual issuance of the bonds. And so in order to approve the proposed financing, the county must be an associate member with CETA, which is a JPA, which was established by the California Association for Local Economic Development, whose purpose is to issue tax-exempt and taxable conduit revenue bonds to fund commercial and industrial development projects in member jurisdictions. There are currently 40 cities and counties throughout the state that are associate members with CETA. A total of 14 counties have associate membership, and those include the counties of Marin, Placer, Sacramento, Santa Clara, San Diego, and Sonoma, among several others. Similar to our own county, CETA is an equal opportunity employer, and the CETA board will be approving the membership agreement this Thursday at their meeting. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about the associate membership agreement. We also have, when it comes time to discuss the actual financing, we have Bill Moore, who is the executive director of the Atascadero Christian Home here, as well as Dan Bronfman, who is the financial advisor on the bond issuance, and we also have our auditor controller, Jerry Seebach, here as well.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Jackson. I do have a question from Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you. Thank you, Emily. The county has engaged in this before, from what I understand correctly, and the county is in no way under any type of an obligation financially in regard to this action that the board is considering. Am I correct in that?
Absolutely, and I was just about to touch on that, and it's actually part of the script as well, but you are correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to confess I'd never heard of CETA before this item came before us, and it's an interesting interaction between the public sector and the private sector. Understand from your staff report that we don't have a financial obligation, but we have to be a membership of CETA. And I guess just curious a little bit about CETA. We don't have to go into great detail as to how it evaluates projects that it might choose to do the financing on in terms of their worthiness, in terms of their mission. I mean, how do we know much about what they do?
Do you want to go ahead?
Somebody does.
Dan Bronfman, I actually, I'm working with Bill and Atascadero Christian Home to put together the financing. In addition, I actually was one of the founding people. CETA, undertakes projects in a fairly narrow band, most active these days in the nonprofit sector. So, we really look to, or CETA looks to evolve some sort of credit facility. It's facilitating a tax-exempt financing in conjunction with a credit facility that's provided primarily by a bank. And in this case, a bank is, the best analogy would be buying the bonds, if you will, to support this financing, although we're not you're actually using a bond structure. But so it's every, you know, so it's really, the credit side or the repayability side, the buffer is that bank willing to extend credit to Bill and his organization.
So it's up to those who would buy those bonds to assess whether they think that's a good investment or not.
Yeah, except for it's not even in this case, in most cases, they're not sold retail, they're not sold to individuals.
Understood.
You know, it's primarily in this case just a local bank that's buying the bonds. That's the easiest way to think about it.
And again, I'm just wanting to understand the county's role. Since we're not financially responsible, we're assessing that we have a qualified nonprofit that's doing things that the county would like to see done. Is that
I think your what you're doing is much narrower than that. You're not. That's really CETA's doing that. You're under the, obviously you're joining CETA as an associate membership of the Joint Powers Authority. There's, founding members, associate members, and, as Emily mentioned, there's multiple cities and counties around the state, Monterey, Santa Barbara are all members, and then there's these very technical, a hearing and approval that's prescribed under the IRS code. So it's not even...
Okay.
It's not even going that far.
Well, great. We have great nonprofits in this county. I'm interested to see that this might become available to others of them, and appreciate this coming forward.
Absolutely. And you have the county is also fortunate that you have some good financial partners in the banks that are very willing to help. And in Bill's case, it's a bank. One of the banks that's headquartered in Paso Robles just stepped up and is offering a very good financing package using the tax exempt structure and really really delivering some good savings to Bill.
Very good. We have another question.
Just
for
another question in regard to, our authority in this arrangement. This is in the city of Atascadero, or I might understand part of it is not in the city of Atascadero, and why would the county be involved in this as opposed to the city of Atascadero?
good point. Atascadero Christian Home has two locations. One's in Atascadero and one's in the county just south of Atascadero. And I would say in general, we try to have these memberships and approvals done at the county level. One, because it's one approval for both of their locations, which is good. But also, as we were sort of saying, if there's other projects that come along, we'll already have an associate member. We'll have a group that's and staff that's familiar with what we're doing, and so we'll be kind of ready to go the next time around. So.
Thank you. Because like my colleague, I'd never heard of CETA either, and I was trying to figure another acronym for it. But
California Enterprise Development Authority.
Yeah. Thank you. Are there any other questions for members of the board? I do need to open this to the public. Remember, we have two actions to take. The first is to become an associate member of the California Enterprise Development Authority. That's our first action, and then we'll have an actual hearing on the request for the loan. So I'm opening it to the public. The membership portion of this action. I have no request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues for a motion.
You want to make a motion? It's your district.
Okay. I do have a motion from Supervisor Meacham.
I'll second that.
And seconded by Supervisor Gibson. Roll call, please. Madam Clerk.
I can get this right. Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Numerical order, Madam
Clerk. Well,
very easy.
Move on to round two here in the process, and that's to hold a hearing regarding the request for this loan approval, and Ms. Jackson... we'll carry on.
It's like the movie The Artist. We're having a...
Sorry about that. Okay, so the second portion of this item this morning is the hearing. The hearing is required per Section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code. The which requires public approval anytime a private organization wishes to utilize tax-exempt bonds for financing purposes. The county's involvement is twofold. First is to hold the public hearing, and then
of the issuance of the obligations by the authority, of which we are now an associate member. The county does not bear any responsibility for the issuance of the obligations, the tax-exempt status of the interest with respect to the obligations, the repayment of the obligations, or any other matter related to the obligations. The county is simply facilitating the issuance of the obligations for the borrower as required by federal and state law. Those wishing to provide comments with respect to the issuance of the obligations by the authority or the use of the proceeds of the obligations by the borrower may do so at this time. In other words, I'm opening this hearing to the public for any comments on this item. I have no request to speak on this item. I do. Mr. Seebach.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller. I wanted to amplify a little bit on what you've been hearing about your role in this process. And I don't think it should be taken lightly at all. It should not be an automatic rubber stamp. I'll give you some good reasons, I believe, anyway. We have done similar actions in the past using a different JPA, and they have been that the financing has been used to support tenants buying a mobile home park, I believe. A residential care facility for seniors, low-income housing, things that had a clear public purpose, and that doing this financing could support could facilitate. The reason these hearings, though, were, in my view, required by the state and federal government is some abuses that were happening in past decades. There were they call them roving JPAs, going around and building projects with tax-exempt money in areas where they weren't wanted. So, for example, if somebody came through, we want to sell tax-exempt bonds to build a casino or a hazardous waste facility or something else that would be a controversial land use from the board has an interest in regulating that, and the board could exercise this discretion to say, no, we're not going to support a tax-exempt financing for something that we don't want. Now, in this case, this is for a Christian home that provides a residential and a useful purpose, and it's already there. So it's not going to be a new home that's going to impact anybody else. So I think we can scratch off that concern. But the next one that comes up, what I'm talking about, is you need to think about that. And the other is the financial ability to repay. It is not a direct obligation of the county. However, you could decide, let's suppose somebody came in with a really fly-by-night project that had 10% chance of succeeding because it was over leveraged and that. And the board could decide we don't want to have a failed project and the embarrassment of having defaulted bonds going around out in the marketplace. Things like Temecula had really bad Melrose bonds that were embarrassed, Placer County. So those kinds of things are concerns. Again, I think in this case we have existing debt. Most of it is already existing, so it's not creating any new financial obligation. In fact, as I understand it, it's lowering their cost per year. So I think we could check off that concern. But I think we don't want to have just an open pan of milk for the cats to come drinking at any time anybody wants to do a tax-exempt financing. I think there is good reasons to give some scrutiny to each one.
Very good, Mr. Seebach. And as I understand your comments, there is potentially a time, or maybe a time in the future, where we may not want to approve every project that comes forward.
Exactly.
But certainly the examples you cited this morning do not apply to this project. You were just basically putting us on alert. Okay. And we do have some questions. Supervisor Meacham, followed by Supervisor Gibson.
Mr. Seabock, and I appreciate your making us aware of the fact, let's take this a little more seriously, but if, let's take, for example, a hypothetical where we denied support of this and not wanting to join, is there an authority higher than we are that could accept that and override what we do?
On the edge, and it continues to be right on the edge to this day. In fact, it's had negative impacts on the residents. I'm not certain it was the best idea. It was what the best we thought at the time, the best the board's decision at the time.
Well, I think certainly going forward, if a more formal role of your office or the debt advisory committee could be made part of this, I think it would strengthen the process.
We were asked, and we would assert that, and we would head it off before it got in front of you, the board of supervisors, and we would submit a recommendation to the board. We've done that in the past, right. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Hill?
Just following up on Supervisor Gibson and on, based on your caution, Mr. Seabock, is this just a case-by-case analysis then done by your office and the debt advisory, or is there any criteria that could be or should be established?
We have it in our debt management policy. There's some criteria in there.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Gibson. And this is for either Mr. Seabock or Patterson, I apologize, or Mr. Jensen. The county as such is not liable for any of these funds, but as a member of the JPA, or is it the JPA held liable if this thing goes awry?
I'm not certain. I'm convinced that we're not liable.
Correct.
Neither is the JPA. That's my understanding.
Correct. Yeah, the Joint Powers Authority's activities are fairly limited. After closing of the financing, it's just to provide the tax exempt status for the financing and to lower, afford the borrower a lower cost of funds. But I would also agree that many, the approach being suggested is very consistent with other counties, including your neighboring counties, as far as sort of, working with staff and sort of, figuring out if it seems like a, kind of a, a straightforward type transaction. Everyone's comfortable going straight to the supervisors. People are uncomfortable, it's very common to go to a debt advisory group and, have that chance to talk it over a little bit, make sure everyone's comfortable with what's going on. So that's very consistent.
Very good. Thank you, our CAO, Mr. Grant.
I just want to make it clear to the board that, in fact,
We don't take these things lightly. And if you thought we did in this case, we apologize because we did not. And we look through them to make sure that we think they're appropriate to bring to the board. And we always bring it to the auditor and the debt advisory committee, which admin is part of, to look these things over if they're needed.
Thank you. So thank you, Mr. Seabock. I appreciate that very much. We'll close the public hearing portion, and I do need to ask if any, Ms. Jackson, if any written comments on the proposed tax-exempt bonds were received by the county clerk prior to this hearing. I guess the clerk would answer that question.
No, I haven't.
No. Okay. So the public hearing is closed, and I'll bring it back to the board for action or deliberation if we have more questions.
I'll move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Then moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Meacham, that we approve staff's recommendation on this financing. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Okay, thank you. And with that, we're going to take a 14-minute break and reconvene at 10:30 sharp.
It's 13 and a half minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll proceed with the agenda this morning. Our next hearing item, Madam Clerk, would you introduce that item, please?
Item number 16, a hearing to consider an appeal for a denied encroachment permit application by Calvin J. Packett for a secondary driveway approach from a property located at 626 Cherokee Place in Napomo.
Okay, thank you. And the staff presentation, please.
Chairman Patterson, members of the board, good morning. Mark Davis, Public Works. 45 of the Willow Road Extension Project Phase 2. The Willow Road Extension Project Phase 2 will complete a high-speed, high-volume direct connection between State Highway 1 and Highway 101 and is anticipated to function as a truck route. Phase 1 of the project extended Willow Road from Misty Glen Place easterly to Hetrick Road. This phase is complete and currently open to public traffic. Phase 2 from Hetrick Road to Thompson remains under construction and is scheduled to be complete by the fall of 2012. A future Phase 3 will extend North Frontage Road from Sandydale Drive northerly to Willow Road. Reasons for denial. Once completed, Willow Road will be designated arterial roadway and the circulation element of the county's general plan. The primary function of an arterial roadway is to support the high-capacity movement of vehicles. Limiting access, such as driveway approaches, reduces potential points of vehicle conflict, thus adding to the safety of the facility. Secondly, the property currently has access via Cherokee Place to a county-maintained public road, Hetrick Avenue. Secondary access to Willow Road may provide a convenience for the property owner, but may not necessarily be a necessity. Lastly, Phase 3 of the Willow Road Extension Project proposes to extend North Frontage Road from its current terminus at Sandydale Drive northerly to Willow Road and to connect Cherokee Place to this new section of North Frontage Road. Upon completion of the Phase 3 work, all parcels along Cherokee Place will be provided a secondary access to a county-maintained road via controlled intersection at Cherokee Place at North Frontage Road. To date, the applicant has not provided specific arguments to refute the stated reasons for denial or revealed any additional information that would permit the county engineer to reconsider the denial. With that, staff recommends you deny the appeal by affirming the decision of the county engineer, and staff is available for questions, including Mr. Dale Ramey, the project manager of the Willow Road Extension Project, and Mr. Dave Flynn.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the board? This is an appeal, so we do allow the appellant to give a presentation. So, Mr. Packett?
Yeah.
Please proceed.
Good morning. I've had the property in Cherokee Place.
10 minutes,
you need
yes.
A microphone also, Mr. Packett. Okay.
Yes. There's a portable mic there to your left, and you can turn that on. It takes just a few seconds to heat up, so you can try tapping it to test it. There you go.
I think Thank we're
you.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've owned the property on Cherokee since 1981 when I bought it. I moved up here in 83, went to work for Unical. And all this time, I've had a great relationship with my neighbors at the back. And, you know, it was Annie and Susie Hermrick with the Marcellics. I had access to that property. They had their cows come over and chew off my pasture. You know, I tried to be a good neighbor. The county, at the time the road was first proposed to go through, came out, talked to me with the representation of Hamner Jewell and Associates and another firm that was Lisa Borquist as assessors. We met at the back of my property in the gate that I have that went on to the old existing Willow Road. That provided access when I permitted and brought in a large steel building, a permitted mobile home. I had to come in that way. Cherokee is half a road. It's only 25 feet wide. I've utilized the access, you know, I would use it for minimum use, but it was my way to get large equipment in. A truck can't make the turn off of Cherokee into the property. I've tried to stay on top of the construction documents for the project, and recently have been, you know, when the EIR came out, two words stuck in my craw, certain and unavoidable. And those are the impacts that I get from this project, but I don't even get access. So I have transient light from a stop sign at Hetrick and Willow every night flashing into the mobile home, so I've got issues with that. The county did do a subsequent noise study that did indicate that there was no real change from the proposed elevation of the road to the high road that it is now. And I feel like the impacts...
Thank you, Mr. Packett. At this point, Mr. Packett, you will have an opportunity to speak again after public comment, and also if staff wants to elaborate any more, they may do that, but you have another opportunity here. I will open it to public comment at this point, but I have no request to speak from the public, so I'll close it, and we're back to you, Mr. Packett, if you have anything that you want to sum up. Yes.
The only thing that I have is as I drive from the corner of Willow...
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Use the mic, please.
As I drive from the corner of Willow Road and the Pomeroy intersection to my house, I see a lot of encroachments onto that road. And some of them are from parcels just like mine. There's a nursery that has access that there isn't an encroachment permit for. And all I'm asking is the same thing that everybody else has access. Why can't I? You know, I don't want to use it all the time. I just want to use it in cases where I have a large load that needs to get delivered. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll bring it back to the board. Questions of staff or comments from staff?
Good morning. Dale Ramey with Transportation Division of Public Works. The nursery that Mr. Packett's referring to has frontage on Live Oak Ridge Road. At the back of the property, there is the old Willow Road extension that has two or three homes built on it also. The old Willow Road extension was never accepted into maintenance, and it's basically a private road. And we did provide an access at the west end of that road for the residences. The nursery actually gets its, it takes most of its traffic off of Live Oak Ridge Road. The parcels that are in there, their major access is off of Live Oak Ridge Road. We do have other access along Willow Road for these parts because these are parcels that we cut off from access and we had to provide them access. So there's so all of the accesses that are provided were to provide access to the properties that we actually cut off access to.
So are the only ones that have that encroachment onto Willow are ones that don't have access to Live Oak or any other way in or out? You said you cut off access to those parcels?
Right. When we came up from Pomeroy, there were flag lots that had private driveways that ran up. We ran up that flag lot with Willow Road. So they didn't have access anymore to Pomeroy. So we've given those parcels access off of Willow Road. And then when we got over to Hetrick, where old existing Willow Road is located, we cut off the access for those residences there at Hetrick, so we gave them access on Willow Road further to the west, away from the intersection.
Okay, and then the justification, as I understand it, is that Willow Road is designated... an arterial higher speed and you want to minimize the...
Our encroachments, that's correct.
Encroachments on that, okay. Any questions or comments? Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. My only comment is, reading the staff report, I've got to agree with staff about the speed on this road. The road was not even open 3 days, and we probably had four or five major accidents at Willow and Pomeroy because of the lack of secondary stop signs. This is a very highly traveled road. It's going to be a major thoroughfare for parts of Napomo. And with the truck traffic and the increased traffic to the high school on this road, I can see problems coming if we don't do something about it. I have feelings for Mr. Packett, and I understand his concerns. I would be willing to work with him to come up with an alternative solution to help him, but I'd have to go with the staff report at this point because of the safety factor and the amount of traffic that's going to be involved in this road.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
Yeah. I don't have any other comments, Supervisor Teixeira, so do you want to...
I move for staff approval on the denial of this appeal.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt staff's recommendation to deny the appeal. Madam Clerk.
Do we need to include the findings for denial of appeal?
Yes. Is that part of the resolution?
That your board adopt the attached resolution to amend the 2011 action plan for a request by the City of Grover Beach to allocate about $90,000 in CDBG program income to a public improvement project. And this project entails installation of sidewalks and street ramps to improve public access for disabled low-income persons. And because there is a contract between the county and the City of Grover Beach, the city has discretion on how to use these funds. So staff recommends that your board adopt the attached resolution to amend the 2011 action plan. And this ends my report, and I'm delighted to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. I see no questions from the board. I have no request to speak from the public, but I will open it to the public. Having no request to speak, I'll close the public comment on this item and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Hill.
Yes, I'd happy to move staff recommendation on this, please.
Okay. It's been moved by Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Meacham. Roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Teixeira.
Teixeira or Meacham?
Mr. Meacham.
I heard the dulcet tones of Supervisor.
Both, actually, both.
I'll give it to my South County colleague.
Okay, we'll take Mr. Teixeira.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you.
You guys are nervous now, don't
you? All right, moving on. Madam Clerk, introduce the next item, please.
Item number 18, consideration of the proposed memorandum of agreement for the Sphere of Influence update between the City of Paso Robles and the County of San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
Good morning.
Mr. Stevenson.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board, Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. Staff is going to be recommending continuation of this item to off calendar. This item, the Memorandum of Agreement for the Sphere of Influence, is associated with a local agency formation commission process. The executive director of LAFCO received yesterday a request from the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance, representing several large vineyard owners and wineries, to have an opportunity to further discuss the Sphere of Influence. No particular concerns, but just wanting more information and opportunity to input on that. And so because the Memorandum of Agreement contains provisions for how the county and the city will work together, there's a possibility that some adjustment to those provisions may occur as a result of this process. So in consultation with Supervisor Meacham and with the City of Paso Robles and with the Executive Director of LAFCO, we felt continuing it made sense. And so we're anticipating probably mid-March coming back, but we would like just off calendar. It's not a noticed hearing. It's just on board business. So.
Okay. Very good. Mr. Stevenson, I think all of us received the request, mm-hmm. and there was a question raised about noticing and folks in the affected area or near the affected area
right.
weren't aware that this was going forward. And I know it's been before the city of Paso Robles. In fact, they had adopted or approved the MOA, and I'm just curious who's responsible for the noticing so all of the affected landowners are really aware of the process. It's been to LAFCO as well.
Right. LAFCO has produced – LAFCO is responsible for the noticing of this. They have produced documents, a municipal service review document that is available on their website, but they do have a – they did have a public comment period for that, and I believe now they'll extend that and make that available. But they will be responsible for additional noticing and making sure that those people who were raised concerned would be noticed.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. We do have a request to speak, and so anyone here, even though this is going to be continued, I will allow public comment on this item at this time.
My name is Bill Pelfrey. I'm from Templeton. As most of you know, I'm on Templeton Area Advisory Group, but I'm not here speaking for them. Templeton has been blamed for being behind on things and not getting there in the forefront. Well, we just got rid of this yesterday, and I'm here. I personally am concerned about the Purple Belt and how it's supposed to protect communities and moving Paso Robles URL almost right up to Templeton's URL. How will that affect us? Those are questions I think that staff needs to answer before this is brought forward, because the uniqueness of each community, the separation of each community, seems to be part
of the study areas, in particular study areas 2, 3, and 4, of this particular proposal to include, to add to the sphere of Paso, are really there, according to staff's analysis, both county and LAFCO staff, for purposes of protection of ag resources and open space, according to the Purple Belt of the city of Paso Robles. It's a rather different concept, and I talked briefly with Mr. Stevenson yesterday about strengthening the wording of the MOA to make sure that it's clear that any annexation request within, if these areas are added to the sphere, that any annexation request is clearly predicated on the idea that this is for Purple Belt protection as the Purple Belt plan stands now. General plans can change, but I think it's real important to strengthen language in the MOA to speak to the intent of adding certain of these areas. The second category of things has to do with water supply and an issue that LAFCO is wrestling with right now. And there's a typical phrase in the MOA that we understand between the city and the county that no annexation will proceed until the city shows a reliable, sustainable water supply for those areas that it chooses to annex. And notably, the draft MOA before us right now does not reference our Paso Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Study nor the level of 3 severity that exists right now. And so I was going to bring before the board the idea, again, of strengthening the language in the MOA to make specific reference that the questions of reliability and sustainability specifically require resolution of issues that we have discussed through this other process. So those were my two thoughts. I appreciate the extra time to let those percolate, and we'll see what we get when we come back.
Very good. Thank you for raising those issues, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Meacham.
Just quickly, and I think that the Purple Belt discussion is one in which it does try to address the issue that Mr. Pelfrey raised in terms of community identification, trying to keep each community with their own identity and not having them blend together so much so that they have that separation. That's one of the key reasons for that Purple Belt. But the other part of Mr. Gibson's comment about strengthening the from the water standpoint, I'd be a little reluctant to go too heavy on the restriction aspect of this until a lot of these studies come back to tell us where we're going to go, because this is going to be ever-changing over time. And so I don't have any issue with recognizing the concern, but I don't want to just make it to where nothing could happen for an indefinite amount of period of time, because these things are going to change as we go. Hopefully we're going to get more rain. Hopefully we're going to get some changes to the groundwater basin management plan that will address some of that.
Yeah. And Mr. Meacham, we're on the same page on this, and that's really, if you look at the language in the MOA, it's instructions essentially to LAFCO about the intent of the city and the county, and we're in a process right now of discussing the reliability of the city of Pismo Beach's water supply. That's a tough discussion, and we're trying to nail down some details. My intent in bringing in a explicit reference of the groundwater basin situation and the LOS-3 is simply to know that those studies, that we would want to look at those studies in coming to an understanding that there is a reliable or there is not a reliable water supply. It is just exactly those studies that we need to look to in the course of future events.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that discussion. I had that same conversation with Mr. Stevenson regarding the ag land. Our ag commissioner actually raised the issue about existing ag land and vineyards being brought into the SOI, and we need to understand that the city is planning on preserving those as part of their Purple Belt policy, and we can certainly discuss that with the city when we do have the hearing, but we do want to ensure that we do have that ag land protection. Okay, well, we'll move on to the next hearing item.
You want to call for the vote?
I thought we did that already. No, not we didn't.
Discussion.
So, okay, well, we have a motion and a second to continue this item off calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Madam Clerk, the next hearing item, please.
Item 19, a hearing to consider a request by Ana Torres de Alba for a curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver, DRC 2011-00021, for a proposed project within the residential multifamily land use category located at 1176 N Street in the community of San Miguel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mobile home onto the property at a future date. As shown on this proposed site plan provided by the applicant, the new house is to be located near the rear of the property. Whoops. There we go. And you can see that near the rear of the property. Section 22.104.070 of the Land Use Ordinance for the San Miguel Urban Area Standards sets forth standards for proposed development to be in conformity with the San Miguel design plan. Section E5 of the design plan specifies that curbs, gutters, and sidewalks are required for all new development in the residential multifamily land use district. I would like to point out, though, that there are requests for exceptions involving a waiver or modification of the requirements for curb, gutter, and sidewalks that they are allowed by Section 22.54.030D of the Land Use Ordinance, and they may be granted at the staff level if the site meets any or all of the following criteria as listed on this slide. Number one, incompatible grade. Number two, incompatible development. Or three, premature development. The county engineer has determined that the finished grades of the project site and adjoining street are compatible for accommodating the proposed improvements. This is a photo of N Street looking north from its intersection with 11th Street, which is located just to the right of the photo. The subject property is within this block. This is a photo of N Street at the north end of the block at the intersection of N and 12th. Just south of this property is the subject property, as shown on this slide, located at 1176 N Street. The county engineer and the director of planning and building have determined in regards to incompatible development that the curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements would be compatible with development because they conform to the San Miguel design plan. With regard to premature development, the existing single-family residence with accessory structures and the proposed second residence fully utilizes the 11,250 square foot property. I would like to point out on this slide, though, that the adjacent properties on either side of the subject property do not have curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements. However, there is a five-unit apartment complex located at the south end of the block at the corner of N and 11th that was required to provide curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements and was completed recently in 2008. Therefore, neither the county engineer nor the director of planning and building support the waiver based on premature development. It is therefore staff's recommendation that your board adopt and instruct the chairman to sign the resolution with findings therein denying the waiver of curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements. That does conclude my presentation, but I would like to be followed now by Mr. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works, who also has some comments regarding the waiver request.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall.
Honorable Chair Patterson and supervisors, my name is Glenn Marshall with County Public Works. I just wanted to expand a little bit on the staff report presented by Ms. Manson. That being in your deliberations, you also have the ability to defer the improvements to some date not certain. Although staff doesn't have the same latitude, your board does. Public Works, staff has looked into other communities and counties within the state, and they all do seem to have a deferment program. They call it a improvement deferral agreement. It's an agreement that the board would, or the county would go into with the applicant, and which would, in essence, allow this the curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements to be delayed until we require it to them to occur. Public Works is in support of deferring this. We don't see any problem. There doesn't appear to be a health and safety issue associated with deferring this. Staff has spoken with the appellant. She is agreeable to deferring this, and I just bring this up for your deliberation.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Can you or County Council give us an idea of how that might work, and do we need to actually have an approved program in place before we can enter into a improvement deferral agreement?
County Council, I think on that one.
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald from the County Council's office. We don't believe we need to have a formal program in place, but we do think if you were to decide to delay or defer this specific improvement for this specific case, you could do that as authorized under our ordinance. What the ordinance does allow you to do is to waive, modify, or delay the requirement, and so you would need to find that there was some special circumstance in this property's case that would justify the deferral. Once you get to that point, we do think there would be a mechanism to allow deferral and put in place an agreement.
Financially to try to accomplish this. So I'm looking for, and I appreciate staff's working with them to do that. And if we do continue this, and if we do have an opportunity to look at a program, I'd be really anxious to sit down with staff to figure out a program by which we could all address some of the concerns we've had from our constituents.
Very good. And Mr. Marshall, you may want to speak briefly, because I do know that we have a program where folks can agree to make road improvements, and this sounds very similar to that program, where they will, Public Works, I'm told, will go in and actually make the improvements, and then they're paid for over time, the cooperative road agreement.
Yes, that is actually correct. That's through an assessment district through the Streets and Highways Code. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit different. The curb, gutter, and sidewalk ordinance is specific to building permits, and it requires the appellant, or actually the applicant of the permit, the property owner to install curb, gutter, and sidewalk if and such it is triggered. In this case, the appellant, although they would be deferring it, they would still maintain the responsibility in perpetuity or the heirs and assigns of the property to install those improvements at their own cost. So it wouldn't be anything that the county would share in this particular case.
All right. Very good. Supervisor Gibson and then Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you.
And I do want to just mention that this is an appeal, and the appellant is here, and we'll have an opportunity to hear from her as well. So, Supervisor Gibson.
Great. I was recognizing that and just want to throw a couple ideas out so that she can respond to them all. I tend to think that the lien idea is a good one. My understanding of it would be that upon sale of the property, that lien would be cleared, or that amount of money would be cleared to the county, or would it be our option to let it ride?
I think essentially if there were to be a sale, I'm sure as part of the sale process, the lien would need to be cleared, and that would involve either the improvements being completed, which would be preferable probably, mm-hmm. or essentially paying off the lien to allow the county to make the improvements ourselves.
Okay. And the other part of that trigger to me, and I can support a wide variety of concepts here because the additional development here is minimal and, you know, at a time and for a purpose that seems something we should support. Does planning staff know offhand how many units might be allowed on this piece of residential multifamily parcel, ultimate build-out of that parcel? You referenced a five-unit apartment complex on the same street.
I don't know an exact number of dwelling units on this particular property, but given the fact that there's already an existing residence with an accessory use, and then she's only planning on moving one more residence on, I don't have a number off the top of my head, but the key is it's already developed, and she's not planning to do any kind of, like, demolition permit or anything in that regard.
I guess the other trigger that I was looking for was if someone was coming in to put, a large number of subsequent intensification of the development, we should revisit this, and I think it's at that point. It makes sense to me for the five-unit apartment complex to do its part of doing these improvements, and this minimal development seems fine, but if it were going to intensify, we would want to come back and see this again.
And I don't disagree with that. I just think, and I do, and she'll be able to explain the reasoning why she's doing this. But Glenn, also, whatever is determined in the arrangement with her is a recorded document, so that will, or will it or will not be?
That is correct. It will be a recorded lien on the property. And in response to Supervisor Gibson's question, subsequent permits may still trigger curb, gutter, and sidewalk or a subdivision, so I believe that would reset the clock, and sure. Staff would be looking at this, and they'd have to reapply for another waiver if that were the case.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Good discussion here. Ms. Torres de Alba, if you would like to speak to the board, you have up to 10 minutes if you need it.
Okay. Well, my name is Ana Torres, and I'm here because I don't have the financial means to put the sidewalk at this point. I guess I did the process backwards. I went ahead and bought the mobile home, thinking that I was going to be able to just, put it in my property. Just requesting a permit would be enough. Then I came up to them, and then they told me all this, different things that I needed it, to add up. The reason I bought it is because for my parents, basically. My mom has been in and out of the hospital, and I feel like I am the only one being able to help them. So, like I said, I did the process backwards. So I bought the mobile home. Now it's in a storage unit where we're paying, a fee, for the rental space. So I'm willing, to compromise, somehow to put the sidewalk, curbs, and gutters. I'm not saying I don't want
opportunity.
Well, just, to consider the fact that it's not that I don't want to put it in, it's just the financial means. I don't have it and like I said, I don't see any purpose for that sidewalk, It's in the middle of the whole, block. So I feel like if there's a continuation, I would see, the reason to do that.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a consensus up here that we tend to agree with that. It doesn't make sense at this point in time. In the future, it may well make sense to do that. But okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll bring it back to the board for deliberation and action. Supervisor Meacham.
I guess, Glenn, I'm going to ask you in terms of the time necessary to craft whatever agreement can be put together. What are we looking?
I would be looking for a continuance to about the end of February, February 28th, and I believe I've spoken with council and planning staff, and that seems to be an appropriate amount of time, although
have you
quick.
Spoken about with the clerk about to see if we have time?
I have not spoken with the clerk, though.
Mr. Marshall. Mr. Marshall.
And we have time available on the 28th? She's checking that out.
While she's doing that, is this, in fact, something that we have to, can we simply make a motion to
what I was wondering.
Approve this waiver and have it done?
There are a couple of things that we would need to bring back for you. We need to have a resolution crafted. The one we have submitted is for denial of the appeal. So we would need to rewrite our resolution. And we'd like to, if the direction is, and part of the approval is to delay rather than absolute waiver and rather than denial, then we need to work on a little bit of language that makes a little bit more specific as to what type of agreement we're going to be entering into. So it's not out of the question. I don't think we could do it right at this moment. So it would, I think staff is probably open to trying to work on that resolution and coming back later today, if not continuing it until we get the agreement actually finalized.
Well, we'll get. If you need more time to do this, I don't have an issue with the time. I mean, we got a lot of time this afternoon, but I don't know if that can be done. So
yeah, I'd prefer that we waited till February 28th, and just because it is new.
I want to make sure
county.
that doesn't impair the applicant's mm-hmm. ability to do what she needs to do as well. Are we okay with that?
On the 28th, that's plenty, I think.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time. We're okay with that? Okay, then I'll make a motion that we continue to the date.
February 28th.
February 28th. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Very good. So we have a second?
Yes.
Okay. Motion by Supervisor Gibson, by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Gibson to continue this item to February 28th. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. So with that, we are headed off to closed session. I do want to announce a couple of things before we head off to closed session, and that is there will be no afternoon session. We will come back after closed session and report out, but we have no hearing or board business scheduled for this afternoon. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 7th. We have no meeting on the 31st. And following the February 7th meeting on February 14th, we have a strategic planning session, and I want the public to be aware of that. At that session, we'll be discussing the fiscal year 12-13 budget, getting an update on the state's budget as much as they know at this point in time. We'll also be discussing the county's master water plan as well as planning department priorities. So it'll be a very focused meeting on February 14th. So with that, I'll ask County Council what's in store for us in closed session this afternoon.
About 30 minutes, I believe.
Okay, and I'll open it to the public for comment. Seeing no public, I'll close it, and we will adjourn to closed session, reporting back immediately after closed session.